Hello, welcome to SJAC. Today I'm speaking with Andy Neal, coach to Jay Nichols, Chris Scott and Simon Cook. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Phil. Nice to see you.
Thank you for agreeing to do this interview. I think we will start the ball rolling with a very simple question. How on earth did you get started in coaching and coaching athletics?
Started about 26 years ago when I was about 18, I think it was. Got injured as an athlete and chose to go on a coaching course. And some people say the rest is history. I tended to give up athletics because of injuries, and then but just carried on with the coaching side instead.
Okay. Was that a disappointment to you that you had to end your athletics sort of so early in 18, or were you already well on the way to thinking, yes, a coach is for me?
No, absolutely not. It was that after the first coaching course, I carried on competing and training. It's just that gradually doing too much athletics, my body broke down and said, no, enough's enough. I'll just go into coaching instead. So it's very disappointed though.
Okay, so your events when you were competing were?
100 metres through to hammer throwing.
Okay, and everything in between.
Everything in between, yes.
And when you started out coaching, well, you're now a well-represented throws coach, in particular discus. But did you start out in throws as a coach or...?
Yeah, is it the old structure as it was? You tended to be qualified at coaching anything, and gradually I just found out that I was working more with throwers, and as a result, just started to specialise in that area. And gradually, just started to specialise in discus, following the athletes that I was working with at the time. Really.
Okay, so who led that process? Was it the athletes that were coming to you that sort of led you down to discus, or was it you really wanted to get involved in discus? How did that happen?
There's probably more of those than there were shot putters and javelin. We ended up doing, I tried to coach javelin, shot and discus all on the same nights. And it was just farcical. So what we did was just gradually focus more on the discus throwers that I was working with, and still doing shot put a little bit. But so gradually the other events just started to wane away a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So really you followed, I suppose, even right at the beginning, a buzzword that we use in the coaching education circles, you were pretty athlete-centred right from the start. You followed their interest.
Certainly followed their interest. I wouldn't say I was an athlete-centred coach at that point in time, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, I suppose that leads us on a little bit to what I wanted to talk about, your philosophy. What was your philosophy, coaching-wise, when you started out?
I'm not sure I actually had one. It would be based around, well, these are the events and this is what they will learn. It wasn't necessarily what was best for the athletes at the time, that's for sure. Because I don't think we had that in the old education system, that we weren't really taught that on course.
Right.
So that's more something that's evolved over time, I think.
Okay, so you didn't really have a philosophy to start with. It was more, we're going to do this tonight, that's it. How would you say your philosophy has changed, and where does it stand now?
Oh, goodness. It's now totally opposite end of the spectrum. The athletes will have had a full analysis done on them regarding movement, strength, fitness levels, etc. And from that, we write down one work together in establishing one-to-one training programs,
right,
and working on how will we go about developing each of these things. So we devise strategies that will help the athletes improve in those areas. So each of those could differ for each athlete.
Okay, so a very individualistic approach, centered on their needs. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying to me? Are you saying you coach athletes as opposed to coach the event of discus, or
very well? I would hope that's how I come across. Yes, I've specialised in discus throwing, but we tend to look at the needs of the athletes. So, if say for example, Simon Cook, with one athlete in particular whose coordination is very challenged, shall we say, we try to ensure there's more of that type of activity within warm-ups and skill development. So although it might not directly relate to discus, it relates to his needs about moving.
Right. Okay, and how would that differ to, I mean, just take another one of your athletes, Jade. How does her training differ?
Well, she, compared to Simon, she's somewhat coordinated.
Right.
And therefore, the type of work we can do is a lot more discus specific.
Okay.
So, so we don't have to, what we call backfill.
Yeah.
Because she used to sprint, she used to jump, and she used to throw as an athlete. It really helped. Whereas Simon, because he was with me from the start, I wasn't aware of all those things that he should be doing.
Yeah.
Talked about it, but never did anything about it.
Right.
So the heads, he never really developed as he maybe should have done.
Okay, so a multidisciplined approach that Jade had earlier on in her athletics career,
yeah,
has held her in good stead when she's now starting to, well, obviously not now starting, now specialised in the discus. Can you give any kind of practical examples of where that multidisciplined background really sort of shines through with Jade now?
I suppose so. If we were to look at the types of training that Jade needs to do over the year, it's not all throwing. There's a lot of throwing movements, yes, but there's an awful lot of things like sprinting and jumping that are needed.
Yeah.
And I don't have to have taught her those because she's already learned them.
Yeah.
So we can just modify them and help and improve them where need be. Yeah. So it's because she's acquired them already that she can then implement them into her training. Whereas Chris, although coordinated, his movement, his running aspects, which are needed in discus because you run across the circle, even though it's a very small circle, you still need that explosive movement.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually learning how to run.
Yeah.
Because as before, he hadn't actually been taught how to sprint and run. He was taught how to throw.
Yeah.
Okay. So hence, the training really does differ.
Okay. Now that you've got to this stage in your coaching sort of life, your coaching career, you've taken on this philosophy of you know, meeting the needs of the athletes, multidisciplined approach. How does that make you feel about your coaching now?
That's not a nice question, Phil.
How do you feel about it, or what challenges do you often see yourself having to find solutions to from a coaching perspective? How you feel about things?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I think if I were to interpret it how I think you meant it, is that I wish, although we preached multi-event based training 10, 20 years ago, we never actually meant it.
Yeah,
we said, well, we should be doing this, but we weren't structured within the club to enable that to take place. It was, well, Andy's the throws coach, therefore all he did was throws, where in fact that's so wrong, and it should really be a lot different from that.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose what I'm saying, if you're trying to meet the needs of your athletes, from a coaching point of view, what challenges does that represent to you as a coach?
The level of knowledge I would need, or I hopefully have now, is would be on sprinting, jumping, and the movements that are needed there.
Mm.
And that's perhaps a bigger challenge, especially when most of the education as would be based around throwing, because throws coach. So therefore, it's trying to ensure that my level of knowledge on the supplementary activities the athletes need to do needs to be up to scratch.
Yeah.
Mainly to purely say, one, identify where their limitations are, and two, then to address those limitations.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. What I would also like to know is, bearing in mind you're trying to be athlete-centered, what strengths do you have, what qualities, what skills, what strengths do you have that you feel really help you with being, you know, meeting the needs of your athletes?
I think, firstly, a point of looking at the athletes, so the observation skills of coaching, being able to break down the movement and actually see what is happening, analysing what it looks like against what it should look like, so compare it to, and then hopefully the intervention strategies that we choose to use.
Yeah.
So when we've identified something, we need to do something about it. It's creating that environment that allows learning to take place.
Yeah.
So opposed to dictating to the athlete, say, well, this is what you need to do and this is how you need to do it.
Yeah.
What we try to do is look at, well, what options have we available to us and which would be most suitable to you as the athlete?
Yeah.
And we try with Jade, she's a very visual learner, and therefore we set up demonstration. She uses a lot of video feedback, yeah. Whereas Simon is a concept type person. If you think, well, we need to lengthen our orbit. Well, to your eye, that might say, well, just keep your arm out further. But yeah. To him, it doesn't mean that to him. It means something totally different. And yeah. It's very, very challenging.
Okay, so strength you sort of identify there is that you can communicate with different athletes on different levels. What about areas that you can still work on yourself as a coach that you feel, if I could just tweak that more? You talked about knowledge, but what else could you tweak to further develop your own coaching?
At the moment, I think it's patience.
Really?
As opposed to a skill, more of a quality, really.
Yeah.
Coaching is an amazingly frustrating thing in that
well, I suppose amazingly frustrating and amazingly rewarding are sort of two sides of the same coin, aren't they?
I think they probably are. It's to actually try and understand what the athlete is telling you.
Yeah,
it's not in your language, and you think, what the hell do you mean? And it's so easy to say, well, just do it this way. But the athlete just won't actually do it because it doesn't mean anything. So that's to me the greatest challenge, is being patient enough to explore with the athletes what they're saying and what they actually mean when we then put it into movement.
Yeah. Okay. How does all this experience add up for you in your role as a coach, educator, a UK Athletics tutor?
I think being an active coach really does bring home what we're trying to teach on course. Mm. And perhaps the key thing is less is more, that through experience and through learning, that every time I open my mouth, the athlete will pick something up from that.
Yeah.
And therefore, that could cause them to improve, but it could also cause what's called interference.
Yeah.
And that they start them thinking too hard and moving away from where we are. So hence the patience of being patient, not putting your mouth too soon, or not saying things that might come out the wrong way. So it's really difficult. But learning that, we can then put that into coach education to ensure that coaches don't overcoach.
Yeah.
So they start to create, and I'm very, very a big, strong believer in that we should create the right environment to allow the athletes to learn, opposed to trying to get them to learn.
Yeah, I suppose lead the horse to water, but you know, can't force it.
Yeah.
Force it to drink a lot of the time. You talk about creating an environment, being patient, and in particular, the word I wanted to pick up on there was interference. Can you give us a practical example in your coaching where you feel you've sort of introduced interference just by, you know?
How many examples do you want? I need to learn from my mistakes. I was working with Jade 2 nights ago, and she's gone on holiday, and this was her final session before the Bulgaria trip this weekend. And it was she just wanted to feel the throw, because she's actually now starting to use the right weight discus. We've been doing strength work with a heavy discus.
Yeah.
So focus was just getting to use the throwing. And I'd noticed a technical fault, which was that she wasn't using the whole of the circle, and therefore it made a difference. And I said, this was after about 20, 30 throws, she'd been doing really nice. And I said, well, about your base, the width of your feet at the front of the circle. And she goes, yeah, I don't really want to think about that. I said, okay, not to worry.
Yeah.
So therefore, after that, she wasn't to think about it. It went pear-shaped. The last 10, 15 throws, we just gave up on, because what she is then thinking about was actually what her left foot was doing, which is not what she wanted to do.
Okay.
So interference. Open your mouth and all hell breaks loose.
Okay, so just by mentioning her feet, suddenly you took a focus to her feet, and then that was the interference that got in the way of her good throwing. I suppose it's all about trying to get that performance, letting it happen naturally without forcing it. As soon as you force it, you kind of get in the way of yourself.
And that's very much with what we, maybe that environment we're trying to create with athletes, is to, opposed to making them and help, well, making them think about something, it's trying to help them learn the movement without them thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay, as you look forward into the future with your coaching, what challenges do you see ahead? What are you looking forward to achieving with your coaching?
Challenges ahead. We have four athletes who are aiming for Olympic Games, 2012, potentially two athletes, 2016, three, maybe four. That in its own right is going to be a massive challenge. We don't receive any funding whatsoever. And we do receive some additional coaching from some other specialists from around the world, which really does help. That's good, good stuff. But trying to keep the work-life balance, so obviously work full-time with 2 to 3 nights coaching a week, still trying to make sure we do personalized training. It's a whole lot of time that goes into that. And so that's a really, really big challenge, I think.
So the organising your time, probably top of the list, just to ensure you stay sane with it all, I suppose, in some way.
You know, it's like married man, children.
I think unless we talk about that in a better, we could get into some tricky old water. Do you ever see yourself leaving the sport?
Oh, well, I hope so. I'm thoroughly worn out, I think, from the sport at the moment. It's the holidays that I have, I look forward to because it's a break from everything. It's a fabulous sport, and it's been really good to have helped create some change. I would think if I can succeed, from my point of view, success, succeeding is perhaps helping someone to, in some way, have got to a major, major championships. I couldn't want for more than that. That'd be fabulous just to see them there competing. I've always wanted to do that. Whether I have the athletes who can do that, whether I'm lucky enough myself to have the skills to do that, I don't know.
Only time will tell. That's the beauty of it, isn't it? You set yourself a goal, and that's the risk everyone takes. Can we get to that goal, I suppose?
I will probably go on as long as the athletes go on. If we keep getting new people come in and join us, then I'll be still probably be doing this when I'm 89.
Indeed. Well, Andy, it's been great talking to you. Thanks very much for your time. I hope our SJAC mums and dads enjoy the interview. And thanks once again.
Many thanks indeed.